From the studios of their respective lounge rooms, a team of pajama-clad TV tragics ready to slice, dice, and dissect the best and worst of what's on the box. It's TV Binge Box.
Hello, my darling bingies, and welcome back to a brand new season of TV Binge Box, the podcast where we chat the best, worst, and everything in between of what's on the box each week. I'm Joe Casamento, and I am so excited to be back for another year with my bevy of beautiful TV-loving boys who I have really missed. Steve Malk, viewer's advocate, I have missed you so much.
Thank you, Joe. I shouldn't be allowed near a remote control.
Why? Have you been naughty?
I've been making some great and very bad choices over the summer.
Oh, really? Is wifey in on those, or does she just leave you to your own devices?
Oh, no, when it looks ugly, I get told to watch it upstairs in the study. Oh,
okay, you get banished. All right, from the CBD column in The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, it's a very, very big welcome back to Mr. Stephen Brookie Brook.
Hello, now in Melbourne and working for The Age. So I got a tram home today.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Do you feel cold?
So Melbourne.
To be brutally honest, today I felt quite cold.
Oh, you'll have to get that Doctor Who scarf out that I lent you.
It's stuck in storage.
Oh, it's stuck in storage. I can't wait for that. Now, rounding out the team is writer, producer, and self-confessed TV nerd burger, Mr. Dan Bennett. I have missed you so.
Hello, Joe. Hello, boys. How are we?
So good.
Good. Now, Joe, I've got a question to ask you. This is just the point in the show where I'm usually doing the talking and the introducing. So what's going on?
I know, absolutely, and I'm getting really nervous because you're so good at it, but why don't you explain?
I will explain.
There's been a coup, Dan.
There has. Well, Joe would win, you know, in a fight, let's be honest. No, but I am taking a step back from the podcast this year to concentrate on actually making some TV for everyone to watch and for you guys to talk about on this very podcast. I'll be dropping in from time to time to keep you all on track, so don't be, you know, getting too carried away, and I'll also be over on TV Black Box every now and again. In fact, I'm doing that show this week, so you can check that out. But I'm not disappearing altogether. I just won't be on every week. I know, but the bonus is that I get to look forward to listening to you guys every week. So that will be a joy in itself.
And hopefully dropping the sly script in for me when I get too disappointed.
Well, you never know. You never know. You're like, I do love you, Joe.
For listeners out there, Dan's the organised one of the group.
But Joe, we've got a massive show to get through tonight first.
We do. Massive show indeed. We'll be chatting all things Golden Globes. I have been on the couch all day, sad to say. Plus, we're prepping to step back in time for a new edition of Rewind. That's a little later in the pod. But first, let's get 2021 started with...
Clap or Slap.
Yes, it's clap or slap time, and we are changing things up a bit this year. Just two shows from each of us. We're trying to keep it a little tighter than we usually do per episode this season. One that we love, which will get a clap, and one that maybe we don't love quite so much. It'll get a slap. I mean, maybe we'll have two claps, maybe we'll have two slaps. Who knows? But Malk, you're up first. What are you slapping and what are you clapping?
I'm slapping myself because this is so bloody hard. Two shows only is impossible.
Oh, the edit. It's always the trickiest.
Oh, it's the worst.
You're not the best at editing, Malk. I think we can all concede that.
We're keeping you on a
tight. I can post edit. I just can't edit myself. Anyway, my clap for this week, our first week back, is a big one. This is an amazing Showtime series that appeared on Stan here in Australia, starring Bryan Cranston, set in New Orleans. Your Honour. Absolutely had me transfixed for every single episode. Now, I will put a big asterisk next to this. There was one major flaw in this series, and we might get to discuss it later. Hit me up on Twitter otherwise, and I'll fill you in. But I just thought it was incredible television to watch, and I love, love, love. Could not wait for every episode to land on Stan. Now, interestingly enough, my slap is also on Stan.
Oh. Yes.
The new Aussie, let's call it a comedy, dramedy, called Bump. Now, appreciate I am not the target audience for this show. Mm. I am a white male aged 47, and I'm not going to get pregnant anytime soon. I just thought that the characters were a little bit too disconnected from me. I had to suspend too much reality to kind of get involved in it. And I watched the first two eps diligently, and I thought I will come back to that. And Friends, I've only watched two eps. So
that's
it gets a slap from me.
Okay.
Oh, that's a shame, because that had a lot of momentum behind it in the Aussie Drama Stakes, didn't it?
And I love to support that stuff. I just never came back.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, I'm going to actually jump in here, guys. I know, look, I'm boss now, so you have to do what I say. love it. I'm going to
wield
crack
that power.
My whip. Yeah, woohoo! Watch out. But I'm going to jump in here because you picked Your Honour as your clap. Mm. So I'm going to quickly start with my clap for the week, and I couldn't go past this, and I have had a sneaky look at it. I won't tell you how, but you can all watch it tonight when I think this podcast lands on Tuesday on Channel 9. I'm talking about Framing Britney. If you've been under a rock, unless you've been under a rock, you would have heard about this documentary. It's made by the New York Times, and it focuses on the legal battle to control Britney's multi-million dollar fortune. Mm. It is fascinating on so many levels, fellas. You really have to tune in if you haven't seen it. I know a few bits have been shown here and there. But just to revisit that piece of part of history, which I know and love so dearly, it was the time of, magazines when we were just consumed by what was happening, what the paparazzi were taking. Yes. And I'd actually forgotten how much they ruled the vernacular of what we were talking about, right? Mm. It was who they were photographing, whether it was at the time Paris or Lindsay Lohan. And that culture has really been transformed by social media. So I don't think, until you watch this, you don't remember how much they did control the zeitgeist.
Mm. Gosh.
And to watch this, I had the same feeling I had last year when I watched the Monica Lewinsky, the Clinton affair, in that I live this part of history and don't remember how cruel we were to these young women.
Yeah.
And I was explaining to my girls who saw bits of it just how recently, up until recently, girls were hypersexualized, how we were the butt of jokes, how Britney, I mean, there's one scene where it's Family Feud style, I think, at the American version, and the two ladies are sitting there going, and the quiz is, what has Britney lost? And it's, one person says her hair, and one person says her dignity, and one person says her mind, and one, it's just like, and bing, you've won a car. It's just it's just awful that we were part of that. I feel like we all have a bit to play in that.
Yeah.
It kind of just really makes you think about the media, their role, just how women were portrayed, and thankfully how, hate to use this word, but how woke we are becoming, how much more woke we are becoming.
Yeah.
So that is a really interesting one. I implore you to just have a look. I don't know the answer. I don't even know how I feel about Britney. I haven't even talked about that. That's another discussion. And I think what's interesting about these documentaries is that with Netflix, they will sort of become the new, I think there'll be a sequel to this. So I think it'll be almost like series two for the documentary will come up. It's not as perfect a documentary, I will say, as Netflix would have made. They don't speak to Britney. It's very one-sided, but it is definitely worth the squeeze. Okay. Mm-hmm. And quickly to my my slap. I'm going to disagree with you here, Malk. I wanted to love Your Honour as much as you did. And I loved the first episode. And I, like you, sat there every, I think it was Sunday night, waiting for the next episode to drop. And the premise was fantastic. The acting is fantastic. Brian's amazing. The support cast are incredible. The streets of New Orleans, as you said. It just dragged out. Talk about editing. Why do they not manage to just six episodes? Just by the time it limped to the end, yeah. I just felt like it was a misfire rather than a sort of mistrial. It just sort of didn't.
It was a weird number, wasn't it? Because it ended up with 9 episodes, and that's my big asterisk, is that there was, I think it's episode 7 or 8, in the recap previously on Your Honour, they introduced something that did not appear in any of the previous episodes.
So they had just a little bit of backstory on that one. They were really impacted by COVID. So they'd shot the first 5 episodes of the season. Went on a big hiatus. You'll notice halfway through the series, all of a sudden they're talking about COVID and wearing masks and who can come into the courtroom and whatnot. And I think that also impacted on the scripting, because I had to go back and redo a whole bunch of stuff. And I thought, I agree with you, Joe, for me, the back end of the season just kind of fell away in quality. It's almost like they didn't know what they were doing towards the end, and it just kind of became a bit of a shambles, I thought.
And I hated him by the end.
Pretty great.
Mm.
Because he was such a noble character, wasn't he? And by the end, I was just like, oh, you're turning into a despicable man. Anyway, enough from me. On to you, Brookie. What have you been watching?
Well, Joe, I think you've just killed your honour for me. I think. To be fair, Dan, as well, that sort of pile on, if it's 9 episodes, you know I'm a light TV viewer compared to you three. I mean, who wouldn't be? But 9 episodes just sounds like something I'm not willing to invest. Here's a nice show that you can watch a single episode of, you understand perfectly what is going on, and it doesn't matter if you miss the following week or not, because you can pick it up anytime and find it equally, in my view, gripping. It's on Channel 10. It's the new game show called The Cube, hosted by Andy Lee. And I have loved this program ever since I saw it in Britain, where it was hosted by Philip Schofield on ITV. I'm thinking at least 12 years ago. And then ever since then, I have been wondering, why has it not appeared in Australia? And I think that the very high production values must have something to do about this. In essence, it's a game of skill. It's a game of reaction time. Contestants are stuck in a giant glass-walled cube. They are given tasks that they must complete in a set time period, which can be rearranging blocks. It can be throwing a red ball. Red balls feature all the time in this. Into basketball hoops, or catching red balls that shoot out of cannons in the corner. There's normally a team. There's a lot of slow motion, because if they didn't have that, the thing moves so quickly
that you just wouldn't
get any sense of it. I don't think they had the balance entirely right on the first episode. I agree with you, Malk. There was too much slow motion, so they've got to get the pace a bit more organized. Yeah. But look, it's unique, and I urge you to give it a try. Kids, I suspect, will love it.
Okay,
Andy does a great job as host, too.
Yeah.
When's it on, Brookie?
When's it on? Oh, good question.
Wednesday night,
7:30, 10.
Okay. Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
Correct. Or 10 play.
Or on 10 play, you can watch it in time. Now, I'm breaking the cardinal rule here, which is I'm going to comment on a program that I haven't seen. But herein...
You must really dislike it.
Okay.
Part of the problem. I'm talking about the Q&A, which the ABC has shifted to Thursday nights, claiming an earlier time slot at 8:30, wrenched from its historic Monday evening 9:30 p.m. Guess what? People aren't watching it, and therein lies the problem.
Fancy that.
I think that Monday night, that news and information block with Media Watch Four Corners, Australian Story, was a real habit for people that they like to round off with Q&A. Now it's become unmoored from that, and Thursday night people are not in the zone for a discussion program like that. I think that Carl Stefanovic experiment on Nine, was it called The Verdict, suffered from a similar problem.
Yes.
It was similarly scheduled later in the week. People want more entertainment programs at that time. It's up against some reality TV offerings, or indeed it's up against the streamers. I've also got a big question.
And it's also up, sorry to interrupt, up against the Ange Robin Robbo show, the Chock Top Chats, that are on there on a Friday night, which is that very, very important part of the week.
Really some ratings leakage in your direction, Joe Casmento. I also want to throw open a question of the host. Tony Jones was such a fixture in that program. They've updated him with Hamish McDonald. I think that the host of that program, apart from Virginia Trioli, who was always very respectful, have a tendency to jump in when you really want to hear the questions from the audience and then the responses of the panelists. The great disease that these hosts have is that they treat it as their show and ask half a dozen questions in the meantime. I'm offering this up as a general trend because most people I talk to, journalists like I am, aren't watching it either. Panel, what do we think? It's a slap from me.
I've not seen it since it moved to Thursday night. I checked out the first few episodes with Hamish last year, but didn't stick with it. That's probably because it was never really like a scheduled, you know, weekly appointment for me, but I certainly haven't watched it at all this year, and Thursday nights is not a night for Q&A for me.
What was the thought process behind moving?
So the ABC said it was an expensive show, And that running it so late in the evening, i.e. 9:30, didn't justify, and the ratings were falling. I think they were down to about 400,000. So they thought an earlier time slot might attract more viewers, younger viewers, but guess what? Ratings have plunged. I think they're below 300,000.
Yeah, 200 and something.
Which
is
a shocker, let's face it.
Well, maybe they'll listen. I mean, just make a quick pivot backwards.
Yeah, pivot.
Interesting. All right. Well, thanks, Brookie. Very interesting. DB, what have you got for us this week?
All right. So I'm clapping one of my favourite shows basically ever. Malk talked about this last year, and I was so delayed in getting onto it. It's Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. This is the Jason Sudeikis comedy series. He won the Golden Globe today for lead actor in a comedy series.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. It's set in the UK about an American football coach who is sent to London to take over a team of struggling soccer players. But don't let the sport element put you off, because this is it's not a show about sport. It really, at its heart, is just a show about being nice. About him being a nice man, about how that can be masculine and should be celebrated, about how being nice can make a difference in the world and impact positively on the people around you. It is just a delightful, delightful series. If you haven't seen it, get onto it ASAP. I defy you not to love it. It just makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside.
So
seasons
good.
Seasons 2 and 3 have been confirmed. So get aboard the Ted Lasso train on Apple TV Plus. And also a shout out to Juno Temple, who is just a superstar. You may also have recognized her from Palmer, the Justin Timberlake Apple TV Plus movie that launched over the summer. She's an extraordinary
actress. And that stupid series
actress.
That Joe made us watch last year.
Oh, yeah.
You're still tortured from that.
She's a star of the future, so keep your eyes out for Juno Temple. But yeah, check out Ted Lasso, Apple TV Plus. It is awesome. And I am going to slap a Netflix series Behind Her Eyes. This is a 6-part British thriller series
that dropped on
Netflix. Look, it's had heaps of people talking over the last few weeks, mainly because of the ending. So no spoilers, but in short, it starts off as a sort of Fatal Attraction type thing. A guy has an affair with his secretary while his seemingly crazy wife is cottoning
Hot
on
guy.
And getting all jealous. Sorry. There are some flashbacks to Crazy Wife's time in a psych hospital and mystery surrounding her parents' death in a house fire. So all in all, the first 5 episodes I found really intriguing. I was desperate to know how they were going to wrap it up. And then the 6th episode comes along and it just becomes totally wackadoodle. Like wackadoodle.
Sci-fi.
Like, it completely changes genres. It goes from being a thriller into some bizarre, I don't even know, it was just bizarre. The ending defies all credulity, and it just made me mad because it was just so stupid.
Dan, thank you for saying all of that. I watched it back to back all week. I was even loving it, Mol, more than The Undoing. The twists and turns had me on edge. I was, you know, it was real mystery, and then suddenly turns into this astro sci-fi, which is not my thing, and I'm
Nonsense. I was the same as you, Joe. If you follow our TV Binge Box Podcast Gang Facebook page, I'd watch the first episode and I put up a post saying, oh my God, amazing new series, everyone get on board. And then I watched the rest of them and I had to go back and say, actually, it becomes a little
crazy. And the acting was a bit woeful. I mean, the Scottish lead actor was good looking and that kind of accounted for a lot, but...
Bono's daughter actually played the crazy wife and she was great. So
she was
there you go.
Good. She
a little
was
bit of trivia. But yeah, I'm giving that a slap to Between Her Eyes. Behind Her Eyes. I keep saying Between. Behind Her Eyes.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Dan. Yeah. So they're our highs and lows for this week. How about you guys? We want you to let us know what you've been loving and loathing. You can drop us a line at TV_BingeBox on Twitter. I think we've started an Instagram page as well, Dan. What
are we?
Just at TV?
TV_BingeBox.
Same thing. There you are. You can find us there as well now too, because that's where I like to hang out.
Welcome to 2012.
Yeah, I know. And of course, you can always come and play with us over at our fabulous Facebook page. Search for TV BingeBox Podcast Gang if you haven't already joined the group. You really need to get onto it. It's so much fun. There are so many TV lovers sharing their thoughts on all things TV. It is a fun little community, our Bingies. We love you all, and you must check it out. But now we have to keep things moving because we have a lot to discuss in this week's
Group Binge.
The 78th annual Golden Globe Awards. Mm. It's usually my second favourite day of the year. Beamed all around the world today. Where do we even start?
Where do we start indeed? Thank you, Joe. Yes, the 2021 Golden Globe Awards, as you said, beamed right across the world with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler reprising their roles as hosts on completely different sides of the countries, it turns out. Not unlike last year's Emmys broadcast, some of the presenters were on stage. The nominees were all set up with cameras at home. Look, it was an enormous technical feat. It was never going to be perfect, and it certainly wasn't perfect. More on that in a sec. But first, let's quickly touch on the hubbub that had been going on in the lead up to the awards. There's been much chatter about how the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, who host the awards, don't represent equality and inclusivity. There are just 89 members of the HFPA who vote and make the decisions, none of them black. And those things have led to many dismissing the awards as a bit of an irrelevant joke, really. Grey's Anatomy star Ellen Pompeo was particularly vocal about it on Twitter over the weekend and again today. But the broadcast did not shy away from the controversy. Tina and Amy referenced it in their opening. Jane Fonda referred to it in her Lifetime Achievement Award acceptance speech. And then representatives of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association tackled it head on when they took to the stage. Brookie, do you think the broadcast did a good job of addressing what would otherwise have been a massive elephant in the room?
Well, I have the privilege of watching the edited highlights of the ceremony via Twitter on the number 58 tram on the way home. And I did watch the opening monologue, which I thought was funny, and you're right.
It's probably the best way to have watched it, Brookie.
Away from it. Well, the edited highlights is probably why I enjoyed it so much more than in previous years. I find it bizarre, though, if they had the members of the association come up and they're saying they're all white when there was an Indian lady there and a Turkish gentleman. So I wasn't entirely sure how they were classifying the need for more diversity, but clearly that's been the criticism. I don't know why it's just being made this year when it's obviously run quite through the decades of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Is it an irrelevancy? No, it really does matter because it's seen as a precursor to the Oscars. What I found shocking, though, I think, was how few a number are making up the Academy. It's about 89 people. Yeah. They have massive power in the industry. I don't think the awards are particularly credible, but an award is an award, and as much as all those people criticize them, they really crave winning them. And I thought the highlights were Jane Fonda's acceptance speech for the Cecil B. DeMille Award, which you can see on Twitter, but also Norman Lear, the legendary 1970s TV producer of such classics as
The Jeffersons? Was it The Jeffersons? I still love
He did
show.
Do The Jeffersons, and then he did All in the Family, as well. Maud. It was spin-off after spin-off after spin-off.
Good times.
He is 99, I think he said.
Yeah.
And what a rich and varied career. I thought he gave an incredibly respectful speech as well. And I think you've just got to love what the guy's done for TV and society.
Yeah, and he's still working, which is incredible at his ripe old age. Mulga, return appearance from Tina Fey and Amy Poehler got the night off to a fun start, I thought. It was always going to be a tricky broadcast, as we mentioned, given all the COVID-related technical challenges. Dare I ask, I'm going to anyway, what was your verdict on the production?
It was always going to be tough when you put your two hosts on different coasts of America. And I think that's, and I love Tina and Amy, and I just thought that the magic got split in half, where they're normally, like, they bounce off each other, they're very close and interact with each other really well. When they're not on the same stage, it just fell flat. Add to that, I think that, you know, a lot of the people who they would normally be writing and delivering jokes for, Hollywood and you know, stars, TV and film stars sitting in the audience, and, you know, producers and directors and stuff, they had a totally different audience. It was all first responders. Fair enough, too, that they should be thanking them and all of the rest of it. But it just meant that they can't give that nice kind of, you know, nudge and, hey, we all know what that's about. Because I don't know what that's all about. The very first award. I think the person had themselves on mute and didn't realize, or there was some technical
audio.
And it, look, that set the tone for how some of the technical stuff was going to go.
Daniel Kaluuya.
Look, Ed, we did get to hear from him before we went. But even the weirdness of normally if you're standing on stage, they would play you out if you're talking for too long. And the first five or six awards, they just got to talk for minutes. A long time.
I thought I imagined that.
Well, and then later they started playing them out.
No orchestra, but just the music. Yeah, it was
trying to keep it to the 3-hour broadcast that it's meant to be. Look, it is meant to be fun. All of the controversy, which is completely legitimate aside, I love Sterling K. Brown. It's great to be black at the Golden Globes. Sorry, it's great to be back at the Golden Globes. That was a nice little welcome from him. It lacked the zing of our hosts being in the same room. And then, dear friends, there was the Maya Rudolph sketch. I mean, the Kristen Wiig one wasn't much better, but the Maya Rudolph one, with her and another SNL castmate pretending to be people that won Worst Soundtrack or whatever it was. The whole thing was clearly improvised on the basis of here's an idea. It did not go well.
It did not go well.
They
keep rolling.
Ticket inspector got on, so sorry.
You missed nothing.
You missed nothing. Don't look that one up, Brookie.
Yeah.
I will say, just talking about Tina and Amy, though, I did love in their intro the bit where they talked about the difference between what constituted TV and film in the Golden Globes. I thought that was quite a fun explanation.
I wasn't a huge fan of. I didn't laugh once with Tina and Amy.
But I was having a bad day.
Yeah, that's right. All right, now to the important stuff. The winners and some of the losers. The Crown scooped up 3 acting awards for Emma Corrin, Josh O'Connor, and Gillian Anderson, as well as Best Drama Series Statue. Mulk has notes. Everyone's very excited about that. I thought, as you know, Gillian Anderson was terrible in that role. Yes. Anyway, Schitt's Creek got some more love as Best Comedy Series and Best Lead Actress in a Comedy for Catherine O'Hara. But I'm sorry, Kaley Cuoco should have absolutely got that award. No question. Ooh. She was sublime in The Flight Attendant. Anyway, I was thrilled that Mark Ruffalo won for I Know This Much Is True, a transcendent performance from him. And of course, as I said, Jason Sudeikis was so brilliant as and in Ted Lasso that he could have done with a bit more of an effort with his costume, I thought, rather than just chucking on a hoodie.
His tie-dye hoodie.
Yeah. It goes to show the difference between what's expecting of what's expected of women on awards nights at home. They get dressed up and dolled up and men just put their hoodie on.
Unless you're Jodie Foster.
Bill Murray's in a Hawaiian shirt sitting outside his house.
You know what I mean.
Behind him, right. Drinking a martini.
I was very puzzled by, what's his name?
Jack Nicholas.
Dumb and Dumber. What's his name? Dumb and Dumber.
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels. Sorry, I was saying Jack.
Oh, yes, his bedroom.
He was just in the next room at my house.
That surely was not his house. That was like a dodgy, you know, Meriton apartment.
It was pretty terrible, yeah. But anyway, what did you think of the winners list, Joe? There were some surprises in there.
There were some surprises. Look, the downer for me with this is I usually make it my business to see everything that is nominated, especially the best pictures. And that for me is frustrating because I can't make a true judgment. So Nomadland I haven't seen. I think it's coming out next month in cinemas here. So that is frustrating for me. But as weird as these Globes were, I have to begrudgingly admit, because I thought after the nominations were announced, I thought they were a bit of a shambles. You know, there were a few weird things in there. They weren't reading, as is often the case with the Hollywood foreign press, weren't reading the mood quite right with Sia's music being nominated. That copped a lot of criticism. And the lack of diversity and, you know, all those crazy things that the Hollywood foreign press does sort of give us to laugh about. But I think largely they kind of got it right on the night. I think it was good to see Sacha Baron Cohen get it for Borat and not for Trial of Chicago 7, although I think
he got it twice.
Great performance in that. But he got it right. I also was great to see, thankfully, that Emily in Paris did not win anything at all. So Nomadland, as I said, I can't judge. It was the best film. Happy to see Aaron Sorkin get Screenwriter Award. Chadwick Boseman, now I haven't seen the performance he won for, but I thought he should have got it for Defied
Bloods,
Blood,
yeah.
Which, and his wife, I thought that was beautiful. And it was also
that speech was just incredible.
It was beautiful. And broke that me. Little skit with the little kids in the classroom. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
And the one thing that they actually all knew, every single child in that classroom knew Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther, and just what a legacy that man has left. So that was really gorgeous. And, you know, I just thought they actually pulled it off. It was nice to see the actors with their puppy dogs and all that sort of stuff. I always like to see the families, you know, behind the fame.
I thought it was
a lot of fun. So I think they generally got it right. Oh, the one I do want to point out is Minari. That was the best foreign language film. I had the good fortune of seeing that last week in cinemas. It's currently out in Australia.
Okay.
Do yourselves a favour. That is one of the most beautiful films I've seen. It truly is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So make sure you check that one out as well.
Yeah. Boys, any highlights from you? Brookie, you said you were a fan of Jane Fonda getting the Cecil B. DeMille Award and her speech was pretty exceptional.
Any other highlights
from your little train viewing?
Look, I was a big fan of The Crown, as everyone knows, and I thought the talent of the actors who won is that they made which pretty unbelievable situations quite compelling and believable emotionally, particularly the actors playing Charles and Di, and isn't it amazing to see them in real life and just work out how entirely different they are
as people, but
look and act.
And speak. I thought he had that same toughy nose voice, but he doesn't.
Which also I think is a tribute to their acting skills because it shows you how intense their performances were.
Yeah. And Emma Corrin just seems so innocent and young and she just was, I wanted to hug her. She just seems,
and what did he say? Thanks for being a great rock, paper, scissors player or something. They sound so cute.
All right, we could talk for hours about this, but let's wrap things up. The Golden Globe Awards are replaying as we speak, as we're recording this podcast, but of course you can check them out on Binge or Foxtel Now if you miss them and want to catch up. Joe, back to you.
Thanks, Dan. Well, next week we're back to our regular group binge routine, and Brookie, we're going to be chatting about one of the most buzzy shows in the world right now. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about this one. What are we talking about?
Potters, we're going to be talking about It's a Sin. It's the Russell T. Davies AIDS drama set in the 80s. You can watch it here on Stan. It was originally commissioned by Britain's Channel 4. It is a very intense watch. And what I love about this show is that it has generated incredibly rich and deep conversations amongst people on our Facebook group, but also amongst people I know that felt compelled to call each other up. It's in part a very difficult, very sad watch, but there's also some amazingly uplifting moments as well. So give the first episode a go. If you're like me, you're going to need to space out your viewing for this one, but other people are so intrigued and compelled that they watch this well into the small hours of the night. So It's a Sin. You'll find it on Stan.
Yeah, look, there is so much to talk about that one. Guys, if you're listening and you have a chance, I urge you to have a look so you can follow what we're talking about next week when we talk about it. Now, we're nearly done for the week, but before we say our goodbyes, we do have time for a very quick dip into
Rewind.
Brookie, what have you been dusting off? What DVD has been
been
ejected out of that player?
I've given away my DVD player to my mother.
Oh, we can't find it?
No, I have left it in Sydney.
I don't even believe it.
But a laptop, which I'm attempting to record this podcast on. Apologies for the sound quality, folks. So I have...
I never thought I'd see that
over summer being indulging myself silly on my favourite show, which you can see on TV BritBox, Doctor Who, the classic series. I have gone right back to 1963.
Joe's passed out.
Black and white, and I've been catching up on episodes from that era, quite a few of which I have never seen before. And what I find interesting is, what do you have left when you take away special effects, when you take away a decent budget, when you take away solidly built sets? all you have are the imagination of the writers and the compelling performances of the actors. And I have found real pleasure, actually, in watching some of these ideas that these writers dreamt up. There's an episode where the gang land on a planet and turn up in a museum and look through the exhibits until they find that one of the exhibits is in fact themselves. And they spend the rest of the episode trying to stop, because they've jumped a time track without realizing it.
Yes.
So they're trying to stop this horrible fate befalling themselves. And I thought that was such a clever idea, and it gave me a lot of pleasure watching it. There's another one where a meddling monk turns out to be a time traveler who has given the defenders of ancient Britain atomic bazookas so that they can blast away at the Norman invaders and change history. So there's a lot of fun in this show, if you don't mind a bit of black and white. And there's a lot of episodes missing, but they've reconstructed some of them with animation. So if you're interested in big ideas and science fiction and you're a bit of a fan of TV history, check out the classic episodes of Doctor Who on BritBox.
Oh, well, thanks, Brookie. That's almost done for the very first...
You will check them out, won't you?
Well, I was just thinking, in all those things, there was no ticks from me. There was crosses. No, I've told you I'm traumatised from my childhood watching Doctor Who. So, yes, I'll leave that one to you. But it's almost time to say goodbye. Can't wait to do it all again next week. It's been so fun to chat to you all. I really have missed you. But in the meantime, we will be over on our socials. So please come and say hi. Malk, where can we find you?
At Steve Malk, everywhere that's important. Joe, I did have a whole list of things to talk about with regards to the Golden Globes, but whatever.
Post it on Facebook.
Yeah,
I'll have to post it on Facebook. The most interesting thing was all but one of the TV things were won by streaming companies. So welcome to 2021. Look, there's heaps going on.
Netflix is behind COVID.
Maybe they are.
Conspiracy theory.
There's obviously hasn't been any new comments that I can report back, so I made one up. You guys are the best. That was from Malk, Brookie, Joe and Dan.
I love it. Brookie, where can we find you?
Oh, well, you can find me in The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald or on Twitter, although I'm less and less using it, at Viscount Brookie. But I do love everyone.
Is Twitter becoming a little bit obsolete?
Yeah, I think so.
No.
But I do love the conversations on the Facebook page, so please keep them up because they give me and a lot of other people a lot of pleasure.
And Dan, what about you? Where can we find you?
I am at Dan M. Bennett on Twitter and _ Dan M. Bennett on Insta.
Oh, and you can find me at JoeCasamento1 on Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us for another week of TV Binge Box. We look forward to your company again next week. Until then, we are out.